I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Many years ago, Kensington, Port Richmond, and Fishtown, known as River Wards in Philadelphia, were home to many factories, including smelters, that used lead to make products. The lead dust from the smokestacks eventually settled in the ground in these row house neighborhoods. They are now undergoing a construction boom, with developers tearing down houses and digging up lots, and that has released dangerous levels of lead dust. That's what our guests Wendy Ruderman and Barbara Laker write about in their latest Philadelphia Inquirer investigation, Toxic City, Tainted Soil. They tested 114 locations, including backyards, playgrounds, and parks, and most of them came back at hazardous levels. They join us to tell us more about what they found and what to do about it. They are part of the Philadelphia Inquirer, Philadelphia Daily News investigations team, and they won a Pulitzer Prize back in 2010 for their investigation into a rogue narcotics squad in the Philadelphia Police Department called Tainted Justice. And it's nice to have you back with us on Radio Times, Wendy Ruderman.
Thank you.
And Barbara Laker.
Thank you for having us.
You're welcome. And I do want to open the lines because I'm sure there are a lot of people living in these neighborhoods with questions and possibly comments. And that phone number is 1-888-477-9499 to join our conversation. Again, 1-888-477-9499. I do want to talk about what you found today, but I think we need to put this whole story, this investigation, into a historical context. And you do talk, Barbara, with someone who lived in this neighborhood when there was functioning, if I can say, smelters and factories, when it really was this Philadelphia industrial hub. What was it like to live there?
It was a little crazy. There was a huge factory, lead smelter, called Anzon.
On Aramingo, right?
On Aramingo Avenue. And it was huge. And sometimes the sirens would go off because they'd have some spill accident. And the residents who lived there at the time would say that they'd see yellow lead dust spew into the air, green, had all different colors. And then they had this drill where they would get in the car and hightail it out of town and go to the Northeast or go to relatives' homes because they were dangerous levels of lead just spewing in the air. And they would cover sidewalks, cars, coat everything.
Visible. So what has happened, Wendy, since, I guess, the closure of these factories and what we have now? What happened to that lead dust?
So lead is a very heavy metal, and once it gets in the ground and it blows in the air, it pretty much stays there indefinitely. So you're pretty much likely to find high levels of lead around smelters. And especially it's a concern in tightly packed neighborhoods where there's row homes that have grass and backyards and parks very, very close to former smelters.
Well, let me take us up to the current day. I mean, this is a part of Philadelphia where there is a lot of construction, gentrification, if I can call it that. And how has that led to this problem of lead dust, Wendy?
So we noticed, now this isn't a new thing. It's always been known by the state and the city and the federal government that there's been high levels of lead in the soil in this area. There's been many studies on it. We decided to take a look at this because we walked around these areas and we saw that there was construction going on almost every corner, and there were piles of dirt everywhere and wind blowing, and streets were really dirty. And it was just, I mean, the development was really quick. Like one day we would go out and we would see a piece of vacant land. The next day we'd go out, there'd be a giant, massive 10-foot hole in the ground. And then 2 days later, the foundation was going up for a house. And so we wanted to take a look at, well, what happens when you disturb long dormant lead that's been sitting around? And also you have issues of old underground storage tanks that could leak lead and other chemicals. And so what happens when you start bringing those things up to make way for development?
In fact, you tested, Barbara, something like 114 sites to try to determine the level of lead. What did you find?
We did test 114 properties, and those included backyards, playgrounds, open play spaces where children play. And we found of the 114, almost three out of every four tested in a hazardous level. The EPA says the level that they have for hazardous, like the threshold, is 400 parts per million. And we found levels much, much higher than that, that were in the thousands. And one we found was almost 10,000.
In fact, that was East Palmer Street and Willig Avenue, 9,882.6 parts per million. Was that the highest that you found?
That's the highest. We found many in like the 3,000s, 4,000s, and most of the high levels were very close to the former lead smelters.
Oh, interesting. So the closer you got to the smelters, the higher the levels that you found?
Usually. I mean, there were some cases where we couldn't, because you can't tell for sure where the lead, the source of the lead, where it actually came from. But sometimes you, when we mapped it out, and we did, we got a lot of help, and we worked with Dylan Purcell, who helped map everything out, mm-hmm. You could see that a lot of them were near sites of former lead smelters.
Was this a surprise to the neighborhood, Wendy?
Yes, a lot of the new people who had come in, the old timers were very much aware of it and had been talking about it amongst themselves. But a lot of the new people that were coming in there, you know, from Brooklyn, and it's a very desirable neighborhood. So we were getting a lot of transplants, people with very, very young kids, and a lot of them chose to live there specifically for the backyard space. So because, you know, it's a great place to have kids, you
sure.
can have them run around, you can get into the city quickly, you can go to cafes and restaurants with the kids in the stroller, walking distance. So it's a very, very desirable neighborhood, and it's an up-and-coming neighborhood. So, yeah, we would knock on people's doors and we would say, you know, we want to take a look and see what your lead levels are in your
backyard.
Were
people open to that?
And people were surprisingly open to it. They, you know, they said, you know, there would be some conversation about property values and whether they would want to be in the story, or did they want us to just heat map, like do a map that didn't pinpoint exactly where they were living. And we were very careful about not pressuring people. Like, it wasn't a quid pro quo.
Right.
There, it was not like, we're going to test your soil and you're going to be in this story. So people agreed to do it with those, you know, we had an agreement ahead of time with the individual people, how deep they wanted to be involved. But, you know, I think they let us test because they didn't think they had anything to worry about. And then when we came back to them and said, you know, I hate to tell you this, we did it in person for real high ones because we felt like we had to. So we would go back and knock on their door and say, you know, these are the levels that we found in your backyard. And they would just feeling of, like they would wash over like white their faces. They would be so upset because, you know, this is their home. This is the place where you're supposed to feel safe and you're supposed to feel cozy. You're supposed to come home from a long day at work, and the backyard is an asset in the city. So people were really, really, really upset.
Barbara, does this translate into high levels of lead in children? I mean, that's part of the question, of course.
In some cases, we talked to some people who, two individuals in particular, two moms who had children, have children, where they had high levels of lead. And in both cases, they had eliminated water as the source and lead paint in the home. Lead paint is the primary reason why children get lead poisoned in the city of Philadelphia, especially in poorer neighborhoods and minority neighborhoods, and where landlords are not keeping up their properties. But in this neighborhood, it's a lot owner-occupied,
right.
And we found children who spiked high levels of lead, and the parents are convinced that it's from the soil. Both of the main ones in our story lived very close to construction sites, and the dirt was not covered, and it was blowing in the air at the time their children spiked a high lead level.
What is the responsibility of developers or builders if they're working in this part of Philadelphia? Wendy, are they required to test the soil, for instance, before they start digging?
Well, this came actually to was a big surprise to me because I thought, you know, like let's take Anzon, for instance, which had to be.
That's the one on Aramingo.
It's on Aramingo right when you come off the Girard Avenue or the Aramingo Avenue exit. There's now a Wawa there and an Applebee's and Cold Creamery ice cream. But so they had to do all of these things to build commercial there. They have vapor barriers to prevent anything from seeping upward from the ground. They have to have their blacktop and the acid asphalt in perfect condition so there's no access to the soil. They have landscaping that caps any bad soil. So there's these restrictions there, but then right across the street there can be a little sliver of a lot that a developer can then just go in and start digging around and build the foundation for a house where there it is generating a lot of dust or, you know, the other issue is taking down homes with lead paint in them to put new homes up. There is like a double whammy going on in the neighborhood. So what we found was the really only stopgap to that would be the banks. So if you're going to develop a really big piece of land and it's a multi-million dollar project and it's going to be multiple apartments, you will go to a bank. You'll probably most likely go to a bank and you'll ask them for a loan. And as a condition of the loan, they'll ask you to do an environmental study, which looks at not only the history of the property to see if it was industrial previously, and then take it further and look at analyze the soil for heavy metals or contaminants, and then figure out how to remediate it so that the bank can protect its interest. But in a lot of cases, I mean, we talked to a lot of developers who didn't go through any of that. Either the bank just suggested it or maybe they just didn't do it, or they didn't need a loan from a bank. It was a different kind of they had their own money to that, or they had private interests. So it was not always a definite.
You want to add to that, Barbara, in terms of just who is responsible for dealing with the potential of lead being send into the air because of construction?
Well, that's part of the problem. There's no one agency that is responsible for all of it. And so what we saw and what neighbors reported to us is when there is dirt piled in a construction site, it is not wetted down, it is not covered, and it is blowing all over the neighborhood. And what a lot of parents have told us is that they don't understand why developers can't take just small, inexpensive precautions to contain the dirt. Like, why can't they put a tarp over it? Why can't they put a mesh fence? Why don't they have water on site? And I went to a community meeting the other night where a lot of parents were very concerned and want the developers to protect them from the construction that they're creating in the neighborhood.
Were there developers at that meeting?
I don't believe there were.
I think there was one, right?
There was one, but he called himself a contractor. But I do believe he was a developer. Other people in the meeting told me he was a developer.
Well, let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. Talking with Wendy Ruderman and Barbara Laker's investigation into lead in the soil in neighborhoods in Philadelphia, known as the River Wards. This would be Kensington, Port Richmond, and Fishtown. And their piece in the Philadelphia Inquirer earlier this week titled Toxic City, Tainted Soil. We also have the health commissioner waiting in the wings. He'll be joining us after this very short break. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And do stay with us. Much more to talk about after this very short break. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. And we've been talking about the problem of lead in soil in some Philadelphia neighborhoods, an investigation by Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Wendy Ruderman and Barbara Laker for the Philadelphia Inquirer, and it's titled Toxic City, Tainted Soil. Now, earlier this week, the Philadelphia Childhood Lead Poisoning Prevention Advisory Group issued a report and a series of recommendations to deal with the problem of lead, particularly dust and flakes from lead paint. Joining us now is Thomas Farley. He's commissioner of the Philadelphia Department of Health. He's also a member of the advisory board. And Thomas Farley, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning.
I do want to get to your report and expand this conversation because I know our other guests have also talked, written about, investigated the problem of lead paint. But how serious is the problem of lead in soil, especially in these neighborhoods we've been talking about?
Well, certainly, if you read the story in the Inquirer, it's scary, and you can understand parents in that area being very concerned about their children. And I couldn't say that it's impossible that lead in soil could cause high levels of lead in children, but most of the data that we look at actually continues to point to paint as being by far the primary source of lead exposure to children in the city. You can, for example, map out where the smelters were. And we know that 90% of the children in Philadelphia are tested for lead. And so we can map out where children's high levels of lead are. And the map of high lead levels and the map of where the smelters were don't match at all. High levels of lead in the city in children are in North Philadelphia and West Philadelphia. And the smelters tend to be in Center City and along the river. So it doesn't say that it couldn't happen, the kids would be exposed, but that's certainly not the primary source. And that's why the advisory board really focused on lead in paint.
Well, and I do want to get to that, but I'm thinking of a child playing in a dirt mound. There's the Wawa mound near the site of one of these smelters. If they're ingesting dirt or they're even inhaling dirt that might have some lead in it, especially one area that had 9,882 parts per million, which is higher than the acceptable levels by far, are they at risk?
There's definitely a risk there. But the question really is how often that ends up happening. You know, the lead levels in children tend to peak around age 1 and 2. Those are kids who tend to put their hands in their mouths and they're crawling around on the ground. Those kids generally are not outside playing. They're generally indoors, and that may be why that the primary exposure appears to be indoors. You know, there was a study done just a couple of years ago by the CDC in the areas where the J.T. Lewis smelter was, and what they found was that some kids had high levels of lead, mm-hmm. and they were associated with levels of dust inside the home, but they were not associated with levels of lead in the soil outside the home, and they weren't associated with the distance to the smelter site. So it doesn't mean that some kids are not being exposed. Right. I think that there's a reason to be concerned about that. But it does say for the most part, even in that neighborhood, probably the main thing for parents to be worried about if they're worried about lead is still the paint in the houses.
Barbara Lake, you want to respond to what we just heard from Thomas Farley? And obviously your investigation is to highlight what you see as a problem.
Correct. Yeah, I agree with Thomas Farley that lead paint is the number one source. But I also think from talking to the parents and from the study that we did, which was extensive, 114 properties, it did show that a lot of this lead in the soil is exceedingly high. And we have met children who were sickened by it. And so the parents are asking, well, yes, lead paint is the number one source, but could you please pay attention to another source and focus on that, especially with all this construction going on? 2 years ago when that study, or in 2014 when that study was done, some would argue that that dust came from outside and not from lead paint because you can't, it wasn't distinguishable in the report. And also since that report, there's been so much construction going on that wasn't going on as near as much 2-3 years ago.
You want to add to that, Thomas Farley? And I'm thinking of even if houses are being taken down, they're built before the 1950s, and I'm sure most of them in this part of Philadelphia were, you're talking about houses that probably have lead paint.
You know, lead is present in soil, not just in these neighborhoods, but probably citywide. The national data says that if you're outside of a house that was built before 1940, and that would be most of the neighborhoods in Philadelphia, that 30% of those soil samples are going to be high in lead. And that's not from a smelter. That's because the exterior paint on the house tends to deteriorate over time and leach out into the soil. So that there's some risk from soil probably everywhere. And the question is there greater in this neighborhood than there is in other neighborhoods? I don't think we know that for sure. Again, I would recommend that parents take precautions to avoid children's exposure to soil, but not just in this neighborhood, really citywide. And I would say as far as these particular children highlighting the story, I'd be interested in knowing how the parents know where the exposure came from. I don't think you can ever tell in an individual case. You can only tell if you look at data as a whole. And again, if you look at the data as a whole, the primary source is what we see every day. It's the paint inside our houses.
When you want to add to that, respond to that?
I think that, again, we're really talking about the disturbance of the whether you're doing demolition or you're digging into the soil is the main issue where the risk comes in. And I will say that while I do believe that paint is the primary source, mm-hmm. we did find backyards in which there were lead cases opened because of the paint inside the house, or what the city deemed the paint inside the house. The house was then gutted, remodeled, sold, new family moved in, and we tested their soil, and their soil came back high. So I guess my point is, it's hard to say where kids get lead. You know, I'm sure when the city comes in and they see flaking and peeling paint and they do dust wipes and they see high levels of leaded dust inside the house, they're going to say it's the paint.
Sure.
But it's really kind of a stew of things. It can be. So how can it be that the house is filled with lead, but the backyard is also, after the house has been completely renovated and gutted and there's no more lead paint in the house, how can there still be such high levels of lead in the soil?
Do you have an answer to that, Thomas Farley?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised that there's still high levels of lead in the soil. The question is whether there's children living in that house or have high levels of lead. And the only way really to answer that is to do a study with a large number of children.
Right.
And the studies we have, again, continue to point to paint. And I'm not saying that this exposure couldn't happen, but it certainly isn't the primary source.
What about, and this is something that we talked about right before you joined us, that if there are piles of dirt, which there are in construction sites, should developers be required to water it down, putting netting over it, putting some kind of cover over it to at least contain the dirt that might contain lead?
Yeah, well, I certainly think if they're tearing down a house and they're generating dust, that there's some level of risk there because there's lead on the walls and that house that they're tearing down. And so there are regulations now that the health department put in place late in 2016 that would require the contractors wet down that demolition.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that they're not following those regulations.
I was going to say, that's part of the story.
Yeah, so we need to figure out how to enforce that. Again, it's relatively new, but that makes some sense. As far as excavation, I think we need to know more about that. You know, we do know that lead tends to settle out in the first couple of inches of soil. And so if you're digging deep in the soil, mm-hmm. you might actually be over time reducing the risk. You might be turning over some of that lead and putting it deep. And it might be that 5 feet deep there actually is safer. So I don't think we know enough about whether there's a risk of excavation. I certainly have not found a study that has shown that digging in the soil increases the risk of people around there.
Barbara, and to you, Wendy, as well, what do you want this story to do? I mean, here we have the Commissioner of Public Health sitting with us talking about it.
Well, I think
what do you want the city to do, I guess?
I think it's more what the parents want. And from talking to them, they want much more controls on the construction and development in this neighborhood to protect them. And they don't think that it's expensive to do or for the developer to do. But that's what they want. They mm-hmm. want mesh netting around the construction sites because it's during – I mean, I agree with Commissioner Farley. Like, once it's done and capped, it's good, and the community is protected. It's this transitional period. And if you go, say, on Blair Street, right across from Schistler Recreation Center, there are numerous developments going on there, and the soil is sitting and blowing onto the recreation center and the playground. So it's in this transitional period that's what they want the city to do to protect them.
You know, I'm also thinking about the construction on I-95. Mm. I mean, it seems like it's never going to end, but that's a topic for a different discussion. But I wonder, Wendy, how much do we know just the construction on that piece of I-95? Is that in any way a factor in the problem as you see it?
I would say definitely, although when I've seen some of the I-95 project in I see them wetting it down more often, the people who are working on I-95. Oh, that said, though, when they're not working, I see a lot of piles of dirt. And certainly when there was leaded gasoline, there's heavy lead emissions still in that soil. I don't know what type of precautions were taken, but there's certainly a lot of soil being dug up. We did do dust wipes and sampling. A dust wipe is when you're just checking the dust outside on the front stoop or outside on the patio furniture, mm-hmm. right near homes that abut the construction on I-95, and both the soil and the dust came up elevated for lead, not super elevated on the stoops for dust, mm-hmm. but you could see it blowing. Whether or not it had lead in it, we don't know. We didn't test the soil underneath I-95.
I'm looking at these, parts per million. That's part of Wendy and Barbara's story, Thomas. And I mean, these are elevated. I mean, the okay level, I guess, is under 400. And many of these are, 1,200, 1,300, 1,400, 1,700, 3,200, almost up to 10,000. And I think as an outsider, you look at that and you think, oh, my gosh. I mean, that's really elevated. These are really elevated levels.
Yeah. And I can understand people really being concerned about that. And that's, we don't want them to be like that. You know, we're living with a legacy of lead that was put not just from smelters, but also in paint, exterior and interior. And also that was in gasoline for years. So lead is kind of everywhere. Probably we would find high levels of lead, maybe even in those ranges, in most neighborhoods in the city. So whatever we do is try to, as far as trying to protect people from soil, we probably ought to be doing it citywide rather than just in one of those neighborhoods.
That's interesting. Even though there is a kind of industrial legacy here. I mean, this was the home to so many refineries and smelters.
Yeah. We don't know for sure that the higher levels of lead are in that neighborhood than others, but we certainly know that lead is going to be very common in soil in any older neighborhood in the country.
Let me get Osman. There's much more to talk about. Let me get Osman from Philadelphia to join us. Osman, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, hi. How are you?
Good.
Thank you for having me on
the
show.
I'm
certified by EPA for lead abatement work. I am a painting contractor, and at the same time, I'm also a landlord in Philadelphia. And I have a serious problem trying to figure out where our liability begins, especially when we enter a home that people have been living in, and they have disturbed the surfaces on these walls and ceilings by putting nails in there. Lead has been tracked all over the house, but they're hiring me to do one room out of their house.
Right.
So I can guarantee that room, but if the lead is tracked everywhere else, these people are going to track it back in to the room after my work is done. Where does the liability for all this begin? This is a scary, scary thing. I never understood it during the certification course. And the person who was teaching it couldn't give us a clear answer either. Because now I know City of Philadelphia is coming down on landlords specifically on this. Where does this begin?
Sure.
I mean, especially homeowners are under the impression that if they hire me to do their work, that I will remove all the lead out of their house. I have to educate them saying, no, we only remove the lead that's exposed.
You know, Osman, let me jump in here, and I'm sorry to do that to you, but I think you called the right place, and I think start with you, Tom, raised an important issue about liability and remediation.
Yeah, well, I'm not an expert on legal liability, but I can talk about remediation. That is that, lead is on the walls in any house built before 1978. If that paint is intact, then it's really not going to pose a risk to the family. It's when paint chips and peels, it gets ground into dust at windows and doors, that then kids can get exposed to it. And so where we know we have a child with a high level of lead, then remediation contractors like the caller come in and they can safely scrape and cover up and make the paint, the place safe again. That is an approach that we've had for a long time. We can continue to do that. We also want to make sure that the paint doesn't chip in the peel in the first place, and that's part of what the advisory group's recommendations are about.
Wendy, one of the parts of this story is about the kind of siloing of responsibilities that, yes, there's EPA and there are other state, federal, and local organizations responsible for pieces of what we've been talking about. How much is that a problem, the siloing of responsibility?
I actually think it's a big problem where agencies are not talking to one another or it's unclear who's supposed to be in charge of what, and they haven't come up with, they really need to sit together in a room. If I were queen for a day, I would have the local state and federal environmental officials and health officials in one room, and they would come up with maybe a comprehensive plan where they would all each take a part, and one would spearhead, one agency would be the point person, and then they would figure out what exactly they're going to do. Because even when talking about remediation, part one of our series found that as hard as the city was working, and they were working very hard to bring down levels of kids with a level 10 blood lead level, the landlords would hire these shoddy people to repaint and do a really terrible job in some cases, because hiring a certified lead abatement person is not only expensive, but the city really doesn't have a way to police that. So what we found was that the house would get cleared because right. the lead would seem contained and the dust wipes would come back low. But as that landlord was pointing out, a couple years later, a couple months later, the house is in just the same shape it was before. And so in a way, Commissioner Farley is absolutely correct that if you take down a house with lead paint in it and you put up a new house, that's really the best thing we can do. But that in-between phase needs to be addressed.
The best thing to do in the long run.
In the long run, yeah, certainly.
Barbara, you want to add to that?
Yeah, I definitely think that's the way to go. The other thing that parents want, as far as the soil goes, is for the city to require that contractors, developers have the soil tested and require that to have it tested. And then if it does come back high, then be part of the permitting process so that they make sure that the soil is covered and contained. And you can't really do that unless you know there's something in the soil.
You did both of you did a piece last fall about the threat of lead paint on thousands of children in Philadelphia, and this is part of your Toxic City investigations. You think the city is doing enough, and I realize there are financial considerations, but doing enough to test for children? I'll put that to you, and then Thomas Farley, I'll get you in on it as well.
Well, I think the report that they came out with this week, I think, is extremely helpful, and I think a lot of the recommendations make sense. This is a costly thing to fix, and I do think that the city is looking at ways to get that remediated so that they can help more families, because it is a huge cost to remediate a house, especially for poor families, and there's some landlords that can't afford to do it.
Can you add to what your report is really about, how to create a lead-free city, especially for children?
Yeah, so the report really focuses on two things. One of them is kind of a shift in the way that we approach the problem. In the past, it's mainly been about identifying children with high levels of lead and then going in and remediating. And we need to continue to do that, but we'd much rather get on the front end and not have kids be exposed in the first place. So it's a shift towards what we call primary prevention. Mm-hmm. And that's why really the chief recommendation of the advisory group was to require that all landlords and all properties built before 1978 have them tested and certified that they're lead-free or lead-safe so that the kids don't get exposed in the first place. But also, as part of the whole entire initiative that the health department is doing, there's an additional $1 million that the city has put up that will help financially for remediation where an owner or a landlord can't afford to do it.
And that's a pretty critical issue in this city.
Yeah, there definitely I absolutely agree that there are owners and landlords that really can't afford to do the work. And so, you know, we can, for people who really have the need, we can come in and help out. I should say, though, you know, 10 years ago, we had about $11 million in funding for this program. Now we have two. It's all loss of federal funds over the years, so it's not been easy.
I'll pick up on that. And we are talking about the problem of lead in Philadelphia, largely because of paint chips and peeling paint, things like that, paint dust, lead paint, of course. And we're talking about an investigation looking into the problem of lead in soil in parts of Philadelphia. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Let me just recap here. Some residents in Philadelphia are finding the soil in their backyards or things like dirt on their front stoop or sidewalks has high levels of lead. These are some of the river wards, including Kensington, Fishtown, and Port Richmond, once the heart of Philadelphia's industrial hub with many factories and lead smelters. Lead dust emitted from those smokestacks now being unearthed by the area's many construction projects. And that's what our guests Wendy Ruderman and Barbara Laker write about in their Philadelphia Inquirer investigation called Toxic City Tainted Soil. I should add that they won a Pulitzer Prize about 7 years ago for another investigation that they did together. Also with us is Thomas Farley, and he's commissioner of the Philadelphia Department of Health. And we've been talking about his report, a report from the Philadelphia Child Lead Poisoning Prevention Advisory Group about the threat of lead paint and paint dust. So a program about lead in this hour of Radio Times. And you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Wendy and Barbara, you interviewed a number of people living in these neighborhoods, Kensington, Fishtown, and Port Richmond. And parents were concerned. I mean, clearly concerned if their area tested high for lead. They were concerned about its impact on children. Thomas Farley, I want to get you back in on the conversation as the commissioner of the Philadelphia Department of Health about helping us understand the threat, the risks of lead. We all lived, all of us grew up with a lot more lead than I think is in existence today. But nonetheless, what is the threat of lead? What does it do?
So if children are exposed to lead at high levels, it causes brain damage.
As simple as that,
but to explain a little bit more, at very high levels, you're really talking about something that you can obviously see in a child. And, you know, in the 1960s, we saw children who were clearly, you know, mentally retarded from lead. We don't see that anymore. Right now, we're seeing our very subtle effects on behavior and IQ, which you can generally only pick up if you do some very careful scientific studies on a large number of children. Also, you know, give you a sense, overall, we're making progress on lead poisoning. Back in the late 1970s, 90% of children nationwide had lead levels above 10. Now we're around 1%. And the difference is because right around 1970, we banned lead in paint and we banned lead in gasoline. It was put out there by the paint industry and the gasoline industry for decades at very high levels. So we're making progress here, but we still the numbers are still too high.
But there is this legacy. I mean, that's what the two of you have been writing about, this kind of toxic legacy left over from lead. And I'm just curious, Barbara, what someone can do. Let's say their backyard tests for high levels of lead. What do you do about it?
Well, the parents who did have children or do have children who test high for lead live a completely different lifestyle than most people. They have shoeless homes. They have indoor shoes and outdoor shoes. They vacuum once to twice a day. They mop once a day. If the child drops something on the floor, they don't let them pick it up. No five-second rule. When they walk in the neighborhood, they zigzag across the street when they see a construction site with the dirt blowing. And they're on high alert. They're constantly aware of it. And that's how they live. They always walk around with wipes and wipe everything down. Their children wash their hands several times a day, especially before they eat. But a lot of times, as you know, like little children are putting their hands in their mouth all the time and they're low to the ground. So it's very hard to prevent your child from putting his or her hands near their face.
Do they feel stressed?
Oh, yes. I understand why. For instance, at Schisler Recreation Center, we tested it before and during construction. And before, our dust wipes came up negligible for lead. And during construction, there was elevated lead dust on the blacktop where the kids were on their hands and knees drawing. And I heard from a parent yesterday who took her 9-month-old. She lives right across the street, and her house literally backs up to Schisler. She took her kid to get a blood lead level test because she was really worried. And her child is 9 months old and had a level 7. So she believes that, you know, just going outside her house is part of the problem. Because her kid's in the stroller and the dust is blowing everywhere, or you put him on the blacktop at Schisler, what can be done? What can be done?
Well, let me get a caller in, and then we'll talk about what can be done. This is Kim calling us from Fishtown. And Kim, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Wendy. Hi, you actually just mentioned me.
Hi, Kim. How are you?
Okay, Kim, go ahead. You're the real person. Go ahead.
So I guess I just kind of wanted to comment on the discussion about what we've kind of experienced over the years of living in this neighborhood. We've been here for about 11 years now, and we've raised both of our children in the same house. Our house was completely renovated before we moved in here, and so there really wasn't any risk of lead exposure within our home. We did find that we had elevated soil levels, and the stigma of the lead in the community was aware to me before we had children. And so when my son was little, we had the soil replaced in our yard to try to extend protective measures to prevent him from exposure. My son is now 4, and he's never even registered for a lead level. He's had multiple intravenous sticks and has always been below 2. My 9-month-old daughter now, it has a level of 7.
Oh, wow.
And she's in the same house. We've actually probably made our precautions more stringent since he was younger. We now have a reverse osmosis system on our water for the entire house, we have a mop 3 or 4 times a week. We have no lead paint in our house. I've had a lead analysis done within our home. I've had our soil retested 3 or 4 times in our backyard. But next to us are multiple construction sites. that are knocking down old homes, excavating down, and then that debris from the homes being knocked down is strewn all over the sidewalks, and the dust is never, the dust from the soil is never being let down, and so it's just blowing around everywhere.
Well, you know what,
and I can't think of any other reason why she would have an elevated level, because I don't put her on the ground at the playground because I'm terrified in this neighborhood.
I hear you.
Really anywhere in the city for that reason, you know. But
you know, Kim, hold on, only because there are a lot of people that want to join us, and I do want to put her comment to you, Thomas Farley. I mean, here's obviously a very concerned parent doing everything she can to try to protect her children. She has two children living in the same house. They have different blood levels. I mean, I realize you haven't observed as her physician what's going on here, but does that raise some concerns for you?
Sure, absolutely.
And plus these construction sites that are going on her street.
Yeah, I mean, as a pediatrician and a parent, I totally understand why you would be concerned. And, you know, there is some evidence that where there are multiple demolitions occurring on a block, that there is elevated levels of lead in the dust that can expose kids in that block. And so that may be the source here. If I had to guess, I would guess it would be more likely from the demolition, mm-hmm. because all those houses that are being torn down probably have very high levels of lead in the paint inside and outside. And so dust control measures are things which we, you know, there's no question we need to do. Again, we put regulations in place. We need to do a better job enforcing them.
Yeah.
The question, how often that happens citywide, unclear. But, you know, for one child, it's still, that's what matters.
How much is enforcement a problem, Barbara Laker?
Well, can
Randy Ruderman?
No,
yeah,
I just want to add that the site at Schisler Recreation Center was a piece of vacant land, and there was no house sitting there. So maybe the paint, maybe the lead that came onto the blacktop, I don't know for sure if mm-hmm. it came from that site. Maybe long ago there was a house there, but that was a vacant piece of land. And my understanding was that they were digging, and they found a bunch of underground storage tanks. And so they stopped construction, and they tested underneath the soil of those storage tanks and found high levels of lead.
Wow.
Now, again, I can't say for sure that it came from there, but it's not only demolition. It is demolition of homes, but there's a lot going on there in this neighborhood.
You want to add to that, Barbara?
Well, it's both. I think it's like a combination. It's like a, you know, a perfect storm of demolition. See, even if the demolition happened years ago and it just sat there and the lead paint just sat in the dirt, and then they start digging, it, who knows whether it was from the demolition or the construction. Mm-hmm. It's just this, you know, this perfect storm.
Well, as you were saying, Wendy, you know, in a perfect world, what would you do? And I guess in a perfect world, Thomas, is we would dig out all the dirt in Philadelphia and replace it with clean dirt? I mean, is that...
Yeah, something that's really not practical. We're not going to be able to replace all the dirt in Philadelphia. Again, 30% of houses built before 1940 are going to have lead in the soil outside. And so what we can do is try to minimize exposure to that. And that can be the sort of steps that people are taking that Wendy was talking about. It's really that, you know, the kids crawling around inside the house for the most part, putting their hands in their mouth when there's dust on the floor.
Yeah.
So dust control measures, keeping the hands clean of children, that absolutely makes a lot of sense. And you know, so where we feel like there are older houses that's generating a lot of dust, that does make some sense. And we absolutely need to be looking at that.
Yeah. Kim, I really appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me see what Paul has to say. Paul calling us from Northeast Philadelphia.
Yeah, I'm calling about the slag pile that's on the corner of Chester Avenue and Delaware Avenue in Northeast Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if you look that up on the internet, you'll see the slag pile. It's about three blocks. It's about a story and a half high.
Wow.
And what they did, they put a tarp over it instead of taking it away. And what I'm saying is the dust from that blows into the neighborhood of Port Richmond. And when there's a storm, like the stormwater runoff, where does it go? Right into the river, because it's right in Delaware Avenue, and the river's right there. That's my question.
Sure, Paul. And I have to say, both
Wendy.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Wendy and Barbara are both nodding their head. Go ahead, Barbara.
Yeah, we did look at that slag pile. It was from an old Franklin Smelting Company, and it's actually existed across the street from the slag pile. The people in the neighborhood now call it a cancer pit.
Wow.
They put all the slag from the smelter in a pile. And the EPA, it was a Superfund site. The EPA had it covered with a tarp. It's giant. It looks like a massive beached whale that's the size of a football field. And we did test soil. There's houses about a quarter mile away from this. We tested soil in the front yards, and they came back very high for lead. The EPA wants to do something to haul it away, but it's something like a $20 million project. So it's a money issue as far as removing it safely because it's so large. But neighbors did tell me that they worry about, because there's a fence around it, but they have seen kids jump over the fence not knowing that it's a dangerous, hazardous site and play on it. And what if there is a hole in the tarp and it starts blowing? So it is a concern to a lot of people.
And how much, Tom, how much is just money going to be the issue? I mean, we're talking about various jurisdictions, obviously. We're also talking about an EPA that the president wants to, you know, make draconian cuts in. Will that impact what the city of Philadelphia can or can't do?
Yeah, if you're talking about, you know, a removal like that or a situation like that to where one particular toxic thing, yes, money is absolutely an issue there. And I'm very worried about the EPA budget cuts. And so what we're tend to be left with at the City Health Department is trying to figure out how to help people avoid the risk that is still sitting there. And again, we're not going to be able to remove all the lead in the city. This is maybe a very unusual example. But, you know, lead is going to be in the soil in lots of places. Lead's going to be in houses lots of places. And so there are steps we can take, though, that can reduce people's exposure.
Such as?
Well, making sure that the lead paint on your walls is intact, for starters, trying to avoid children's exposure to dust. And then, you know, as we said, we're hoping to propose a policy in front of the city council that would require all landlords test and certify our properties as being lead safe or lead free. That's where major problems are. It's low income kids in older houses in North Philly and West Philly that are getting the most exposure now.
But does this article raise concerns about lead in soil, in dirt?
I think it's something we need to know more about. There's evidence we can find of from demolitions getting levels of exposure. I have not been able to find studies that saying excavation is going to increase risk to people in the neighborhood. It certainly is a theoretical risk. Mm-hmm. So I think we need to know more about it, and then also know more about if that is actually causing kids to have high levels of lead, what's the best way to deal with it? Because that's not entirely clear as well. If you require contractors to test for lead in soil citywide, they're going to find it. And so maybe it should just be, well, we recommend some basic practices that they should use everywhere. It's not entirely clear right now what the response should be.
And I'm curious, Wendy, what you and Barbara are looking at next, or what kind of follow-up to this particular investigation?
This part right
yeah.
now, yeah.
yeah.
So we are just the community keeping our pulse on the community, and we've been attending many community meetings, meetings in which developers are presenting their plans and are about to dig into the soil or about to take down an old gas station. We're just going to be tracking, you know, we're just going to try to keep our finger on the pulse of the neighborhood and hopefully come out with something soon that just...
It's kind of a follow-up.
Because one pediatrician's office is thinking about, instead of testing kids at 1 year, moving that to 9 months. And I think maybe Kim, who was one of our callers, may have been the impetus for them to change their testing protocol.
And will you look at other parts of the city, or is this really your focus, Barbara?
We thought of that, but for now we're still focused in this neighborhood because that's where we did the study, and that's where a lot of the parents are getting together and organizing what they want to do. One of the things they're talking about is putting together a panel of experts from the EPA, the city, so they can kind of express their concerns and see if they can work with the state and the city to try to find solutions to the problem.
We're almost out of time, but go ahead.
I could just jump in there. I could totally understand parents in this neighborhood being very worried. And as a parent and a pediatrician, I totally get that. But it is worth pointing out that in the 19125 zip code, which I think is the zip code where they were doing their work, they actually have lower levels of lead there than they have on other zip codes in the city, as a matter of fact, than most of the city. So it's not like they're living in the worst place for that risk. So there's steps need to be taken, but parents, you know, need to put in some context.
What is the worst place?
Looks like 19132, 19140.
Which is what, North Philly?
North Philly and West Philly, because it correlates with older housing and with poverty, where the paint is deteriorating.
Well, I appreciate all three of you joining us today and coming in and talking about this really important issue. Wendy Ruderman, Barbara Laker, their series in the Philadelphia Inquirer, part of Toxic City, the most recent one, part of a story that came out on Sunday called Toxic City, Tainted Soil. Thank you for coming in and joining us on Radio Times.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
You're welcome. And Thomas Farley, Commissioner of the Philadelphia Department of Health, thank you for coming in as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm Marty Moscowane, and thank you for joining us on Radio Times.